The Family Ties Podcast is a fresh and new series created and curated by two sisters, Kelly Ritchie and myself, Julia Avery, on opposite sides of the United States. We want to share our journey of staying connected through the weekly discussion of topics that both affect and inspire us.
These topics range from arts and entertainment, inspirational women and role models, science, global issues, psychology, life experiences, pet peeves, etc. Distance may keep us apart, but family ties creates the perfect backdrop to remain connected, challenged, and always learning.
Welcome back to the Family Ties Podcast. I'm Julia Avery, and this is my sister
Kelly.
And co-host.
Hi, it's Kelly here.
Yay. thank you for joining us for our second episode ever. As of right now, we are recording during the coronavirus pandemic. Everything is closing down. The states are mandating curfews. It's a crazy time. Right now, I'm at home. All of the animals are in here. You might hear them barking. I think the same thing goes for Kelly. Kelly, what's going on with you?
Oh, well, there's me and three dogs in this room. But since we are dealing with this coronavirus, we definitely, you know, both of us felt like we should give you a heads up that you know, things will be a little bit different, not as streamlined as far as like sound goes. All my roommates are at home and at large in the house, so you'll probably hear some doors closing, some doggy sounds. But I feel like it's inevitable at this time, so just bear with us and maybe, you know, just giggle when you hear a dog bark at, you know, strangers walking by the house, that kind of thing. So don't judge my sound quality too much. Please.
No, respect her because she and her roommates are practicing social distance.
Except for me. Okay. And I'm still working, but I'm considered an essential. So.
You're definitely an essential in my life, Kelly.
Oh, thank you. I really, you know, you're my essential. So anyways, Julie, what are we going to be doing today?
Today, we're going to be hitting up our topics for psychology and art inspiration together. So, every week, we'll be kind of covering different topics. So, this week, it's going to be the art and psychology, and we've got some different movies and past situations that are kind of connected to them that we want to discuss and kind of delve into and share with you guys. So,
yeah.
Kelly.
All I have to say is that during this talk, I'll be quoting quite a bit from an article I wrote about my mom for an art publication a couple of years back, because I think it really fits this discussion really well. The article was called Susie's Zoo, because that's what our mom liked to refer to us and her home as, in addition to referencing the cartoon by the same name.
It seemed pretty accurate, though, to be honest.
Yeah. So the nitty-gritty of this episode is that basically I'm of the opinion that everybody could find a movie or two that could loosely describe their childhood if they had to pick one to offer as an example to like a friend or a colleague, which could help that person get a feel for their past. I have several. These movies scarily err closely to my upbringing, that when I saw them, I got chills. You know, my heart started to race, and I think back on those films regularly. Julia picked two movies, I picked two, and we're going to discuss them in depth. I can't wait to hear your first example, Julia, so kick it off.
So, I'm going to go with, and don't judge me, because I'm not like a crazy Disney fan. I'll watch cartoons and stuff, usually when I'm around people who are obsessed with it, just to be generous or kind. You know, thoughtful, allow somebody else to pick something to watch. Well, Heather, our sister Heather, she picked out Tangled, and it actually hit really, like, close to home with me, and I was really shocked. So it's basically about, like, the Rapunzel story, and this version of the Rapunzel is where the lady, I think it's Gothel, she kidnaps Rapunzel, keeps her in the tower, but she convinces Rapunzel that she's her mother. And the whole dynamic of her as the mother and keeping her stuck in the tower is very similar to how we were suppressed at home. Like the manipulation with, oh, you don't love me, or you must not, like, guilt tripping, constant guilt tripping, as if, like, you weren't proving yourself enough or whatever. And so you're always trying to overcompensate and prove it that you did love them and you understood, but it was her way of, like, keeping you from outside influences, keeping you from seeing that things were better mm-hmm. outside. And it's a very narcissistic kind of thing too. This Gothel, I'll call her the mom just because that was the role between her and Rapunzel for the most part of the movie. So she, like, had this very narcissistic and was attitude, mother knows best all the time. And anytime Rapunzel would, like, kind of come up with things that she wanted to do or go outside of the tower and try, she would, like, make it seem like what she was wanting to do was, like, an attack on her. Constant gaslighting.
Dang, I need to see this movie.
I mean, I was like, wow, this is this goes deep. For Disney, it was like a pretty anti-mom example. And of course, she wasn't the real mom anyway. It was very much a kidnapping situation. But also an excessive need for praise, admiration, and recognition. Even if it was, like, over, like, small things. So, like, she wants to be considered a good mom, for instance. Like, our mom was always, like, making us feel bad because we made her feel like she was a terrible mom. So we'd have to constantly reassure her. No, Mom, you're fine. You're good. You're good. You're the best mom. Oh, you're great. And then she'd be like, oh, you made me feel awful. The Lord tells me that you don't love me.
Wow.
Shit like that.
I mean, it must be nice to be that connected to the Lord. But my first choice for movies is called The Wolf Pack. It's a documentary about five brothers and one girl, homeschooled and isolated from the rest of society and outside the world, and from the outside world, inside of their really tiny New York apartment. So their only release from their monotony and their mindless boredom is play acting and recreating scenes from their favorite movies. This really reminded me a lot of us growing up, Julia. I don't know.
Yeah, I can already see that. I can already, like, see us doing the same things. Like, I've got memories just kind of coming back.
Yeah. I mean, down to just using one example is we would play act Sword in the Rose back in E-Town, and we would make costumes, and I would make actual hoop skirts, like, out of wire hangers and every layer we could possibly get. So this really already struck a chord with me. So basically, we were raised in a more strict conservative environment where our movie options were a lot more limited and very tame, but we rewatched them and we knew them by heart the way those kids in the movie did. But instead of acting out scenes from, like, Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs, we would act out, like, old Disney live actions. The Sword and the Rose I mentioned, Fiddler on the Roof, or The Sound of Music. So especially with all of the musical numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and let me also add Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. That's a whole other conversation in itself, but that was one of my favorites. But we would play act that all the time. You may have been too young to remember how much this played a role in our lives, Julia, while we were living in E-Town, but there were others later on that would, you know, we'd go crazy over play acting. What were some that you remember that I missed?
I know you would reenact like Lord of the Rings bits between Frodo and Sam.
Oh yeah, I remember me and Sarah, we were really good. She was excellent at the Sam parts.
Yeah, you and Sarah were the Frodo and Sam couple. Like, you guys were no joke. I mostly remember playing pretend, like coming up with my own characters. More so than copying movies.
Well,
Like we at least had the woods to kind of go out and create little forts,
true.
pretend houses, and
Yeah.
kind of up the level of pretend.
Well, I
You
mean,
hear that dog?
yeah, I
Diddle.
heard that. That's so cute.
That's
I
Lux.
think very early on, like before you were born, Julia, we were more or less just raised on the old Hollywood classics. So Janet would clamor for Fred Astaire movies, and we were very enamored with anything that came on the screen, basically, even if it's black and white or silent. Gary Cooper, though, was a particular favorite of mine, but essentially, I've just always loved movies. It was my
Same.
escape, my magic, growing up in a puritanical homeschool, abusive home, where even like old Hollywood black and white movies could be seen as evil and were screened for, their content. Movies were our form of escapism from our harsh reality. So we took,
Yeah.
weekly trips to the library to select movies, most of them the same ones over and over. Mom had to approve the choice, then watch it first when we got home, then we could watch it. And the same principle applied to books. So just kind of wrapping up Wolfpack, the, lack of socialization. Causes the children to form really close bonds with each other and also causes them to be quite eccentric.
I need to see
It's
this.
beautiful. You should really watch it. And I really want to see where the kids are now. The dad is kind of like mom figure to us.
Okay.
He's definitely mentally ill. And I think he has a severe distrust of like the government or anything that's normal socialization. And so
Okay.
he. Like, imagine if we were all kind of quarantined to like this tiny one bedroom Brooklyn apartment. That's not nice. And you can't go outside. You don't have other activities you go to or piano lessons. You are just in the house. And it's not necessarily that you're even learning. It doesn't even seem that these kids were really doing school, which is also
Wow.
very
Very
reminiscent.
similar.
Yeah. The only difference, or the big difference, is, location, and then there are five boys versus five girls in our family, and then their one
Interesting.
girl to our one boy. I found their play acting to be a form of not just an escapism from their boredom and abuse and loneliness, but it was a way to pass the time and maintain bonds with each other. They learned to work as a team, they would create these costumes, and they would work to perform the roles they saw on screen, build their sets, and.
It
It's
seems therapeutic as well. It's a way to cope with your situation.
yeah. Well, yes. So I also wrote that it seemed to be their attempt at controlling in a play world, an environment,
Yeah.
that they typically couldn't control. So this
The
spoke
one thing that
volumes.
they had freedom of choice over.
Right. So I felt like
That's
I was watching, a
interesting.
citified version of my childhood. Oftentimes, we would
What
extend.
our version of Sex in the City would be.
Whoa, whoa, Julie.
No sex.
Right. No sex, no cities. So us, we would extend our play acting to the woods that skirted our property line, and we'd build forts, spend hours pretending to be the boxcar children. Do you remember those books?
Yes, I do.
We basically loved pretending we were the kids before their grandpa found them and adopted them, living out in the wild. So our imaginations had no bounds, and we'd, create very elaborate plots and storylines to follow and act out. And it usually involved being orphans on the run. Somehow, like adults always symbolize danger and ruthlessness. So that
Yeah.
must have stemmed from our upbringing.
Weird.
Huh. But what strikes me the most is how those kids could stay so marginally sane in a tiny New York apartment, never going out, never have activities or outlets allowed to them. We at least have the library or the woods or the outdoors. So that's the Wolf Pack, guys. You should go and watch it. It's on Netflix. It is totally worth the watch. And I'm going to look into those boys and see where they're at. And maybe we'll give you an update. But
Yeah, please let me know. I'm
yeah.
gonna watch that. That sounds fascinating.
Tell me once you've watched it. I really want to know what you think.
Yeah.
What's your number two, Julia?
My number two is Carrie. I didn't want to lead off with that one because I feel like that one is very predictable. But yeah, Carrie with the religion and the oppression and the just how she viewed sex and any kind of like her boobs being considered she was a dirty what
Dirty
they were called dirty
pillows.
pillows. It's just and I remember because like I got my boobs pretty early and that terrified mom. I couldn't have like even if the shirt was baggy and didn't cling anywhere to me, you'd see the bumps. And she was like, I can see them.
That was
How can we hide
offensive.
them? It's like, I'm sorry. I don't.
Just
I
short of
wish.
taping them down.
Yeah. There was one Christmas I lost my shit because, like, I was already wearing a shirt that was two sizes too big. It was like a bag. And, she was upset because you could see the outline of my boobs underneath of it. And I was like, she wanted me to change my shirt. And I was like, this literally happens with every shirt because the fabric falls.
You're like, I have
It
a
falls on your
body.
body. And when there are bumps, you see the bumps. I was like, what else do you want me to wear? I mean, you literally want me to wear like a trash bag. And so I went and I got a trash bag. And I cut armholes and a neck hole out of it, and I put it over, and I said, "Are you happy now?" And I was like, "Up, oh, guess not. You can still see the bumps because guess what? Gravity." She was upset because I was
No
being
way.
smart with her. So, anyway, but yeah, Carrie, she's extremely controlling, and her weird connection, and oppressive nature that she used God for. It wasn't a healthy religious relationship. It was like,
It's never about
you know,
joy
no,
or
it was
love.
no, it was all about pain and suffering and sacrifice and
Doom, gloom.
doom. Yeah, sins,
She's like the
sins
preacher
galore.
in the beginning of Pollyanna when he's giving his fire and brimstone sermons to the church, and they're all just, it's just the most painful, every Sunday, the most painful thing.
That's what that was. I mean, I don't I could go on and on about this, but I don't want to like talk in circles. So, I'll kind of like cut it off there 'cause I feel like everybody's pretty much seen Carrie and you know,
So you're
knows
just
what I'm
saying,
talking
like,
about.
I'm long-winded.
No, I have these little trails that I take, side trails that I take when my mind goes and has a point here to make and a point here to make. And I'm afraid if I let myself talk too long, I'll get lost down all these trails. It won't come back
Well,
to bring it all
that's the
together.
whole point of, these discussions. So don't feel bad about getting lost. We can always bring it back. But it is really interesting to think about these parallels because I thought the same thing about Carrie. Like, it's been so long since I've seen the original, and I do refuse to watch the Chloe Grace Moretz one just because out of principle. Like, I don't need it. But I do think that when you take, I mean, we could really even get more serious about this. Just taking Carrie as an example of an already awkward and shy teen who isn't trying to go out there and do ridiculously rebellious things. Like she wants a normal life and she's still respecting her mother, but it's never good enough. So there's that fear of that constant abuse that no matter what you do, you're always going to be cursed. And of course, not all of us can get like telekinesis or telekinetic powers to like blast everyone who ever hurt us. That's a wish fulfilling revenge fantasy, but it does
but go just that relationship with their mom, just unattainable expectations, like the expectations for showing her love for the Lord, love for her, her willingness to basically be humbled before Christ, you know.
We're gonna get gross here and just talk about that opening scene, you know, when she has her first period.
Oh yeah.
Just remember back. I don't know what your experience was like, but I do remember mine when I got my first period. She basically just had, there was no comfort, there was no explanation. She basically put a tampon in my hand with the little instruction booklet, and that was that. And I was terrified. I've never, since, you know, we weren't allowed to really do much, touching yourself was really looked down upon. It, not just looked down upon, it was like you needed to ask the Lord for forgiveness. But
oh, she would go through the laundry to find my underwear when I was like 11.
I never understood
and if
that.
If she saw any spotting on it, she would pull me into the back room's closet and spank me, show me the underwear, and we'd be like praying for an hour for the Lord to forgive me. That happened on a regular basis. She would go through my dirty laundry to look at my underwear.
But that doesn't, that's not even scientific because.
No, because it's just discharge.
Yeah.
So. Like, I didn't even understand. I didn't even understand what I was apologizing for. I didn't know what she was looking for. I had no fucking clue.
These are the things that to other people may seem like an exaggeration, but this was our everyday life. And I think it's important to not mince words and to not just be like, yeah, mom's like the mom and Carrie, but kind of go dig a little deeper for sure. Like that opening scene, I remember my experience not being quite like that because there was nobody watching and laughing, but I felt terrified. So I will always remember that.
I was equally terrified. I thought I was bleeding to death.
Well,
and she'd gotten me a box of tampons and just gave me the box.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to read through it and figure it out. And
you remember the American Girls girl dolls, and like they'd have books. There was this one book I saw at Barnes & Noble one time, and it was about female, like being a young girl and female hygiene and things like that. And it started to describe like very PG, like what your period was. And she caught me with the book and I was punished. And that was like American Girls. But that's the only thing that gave me comfort when I remembered back on what it said in the time frame that I was able to look at it. And I was like, okay, the American Girl book says that this is normal for everyone. So I was like,
oh my God,
I know. So, but the next movie of mine, it's going to be even more cheerful than Julia's.
What's yours, Kelly?
Oh, Julia, it's the, I think this one really closely describes our childhood. The Australian horror thriller, The Babadook. So while it's not the scariest movie to watch, I felt myself
emotionally. I love that movie.
I love it too. I felt myself like really emotionally drained by the end of this movie because I realized it was about my mom. So my mother is the mother in this film, and the Babadook is a horrific representation of her mental illness and how it manifests itself in her life, in the life of her son. No matter how hard she tries to deny it, burn it, hide it, tamp it down, or even like fight it, it keeps rearing its ugly head. You can't get rid of the Babadook, Julia.
Yeah,
basically.
And it's amazing how real it seems when it's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like it seems so real. The terror seems so real to her, and she's unable to see that it's anything else but just her problem.
Well, she in just her head. It's yeah.
I'm talking about mom.
Right.
Like the fears and her mindset, her view on everything, that's the way it was. It was,
it's always, is like, I think this is sort of what you're trying to say, is that people with mom's issue and with the lady in this movie, they're not able to see it as something that they're doing.
Right. That's, yeah.
They have clever ways of disguising it as the fault of others or the mistreatment of others to them, when it's actually them being the terrifying one. And I think it's like when I first watched the movie, I thought this instantly. And other people I talked to who watched it, who don't have insane parents or an insane parent, they didn't get it. They just said, well, it wasn't very scary. You know, the monster wasn't scary at all. If you're watching it as like a movie, like a monster movie, then you're not really getting the point. Like it's more subtle, and it's definitely got an undercurrent of something else. It's not a straight up horror. To me, it's a psychological horror. It's about the mind, which those are my favorite horror movies anyways. But I basically just feel like all mental illness, when it's left untreated, it goes nowhere. So for the mom in the movie, you know, at the end, she's shut it away in her basement. She's thinking she's got it under control, visiting it, feeding it daily, so it doesn't run wild. So we don't really know, like, does this mean that she's now on medication? Is she, you know, solving this?
Is she managing it and taking care of the problem?
Right.
Or is she in denial and just keeping it alive?
Yeah. Is she feeding it with, is she feeding it with, you know, medicine that can help her? Or is she just feeding it the more and more fear and just kind of tamping it down? Or does it mean she's, you know, doing some kind of self-medicating and it's only a matter of time, you know, before the beast is back on the prowl again? I felt such fear for the boy. I was like, at the end, I thought, I was fully of the opinion that she was going to kill the boy at some point. We just wouldn't. That was a different story that we wouldn't know. Yeah. But that's the impression I got. It was a pretty hopeless situation. It wasn't a happy ending the way it was kind of trying to treat it. And so it really depends on how you view the movie, what you see the symbolism as. But
yeah, that's what I saw too when I watched it. It just seemed like an illustrated version of an interpretation of mental illness.
Yeah. I mean, after I watched it, I showed it to you and I said, I need you to tell me what this movie makes you think of when it's over, because I didn't want to like spoil it. And you told me immediately, yeah, that was a movie about her mom. And then we both, you know, discussed it and, you know, shed some tears. My mom's progression into mental illness, her multiple personality disorder, bipolar, you know, depression, has all been a gradual progression over the years. So when I was really little, she was super strict, very demanding, physically abusive, especially when we did things that made her angry. But the crazy Susie started to morph into being after you were born, Julia, and then it continued to worsen. So she'd, you know, punish us for the most minute offenses, and we would often be lined up down the hallway waiting for spankings. Like,
yep, I remember that. And you could hear the other kid in the room crying.
It's interesting, and because there's no way, and we were always super good kids, there's no way that we could have all made such serious infractions on the same day at the same time. It was just, we were purely captives of her moods and her anger.
And some days it was more physical, and then some days it would be more mental. Like, she would, because we hadn't proven that we had loved her, she was going to go kill herself, and she would get in the car and make a scene of it. It would be so dramatic.
Oh, she'd do that with you guys.
Like, she would drive down the driveway. We had a very long driveway, like a quarter of a mile long, with trees down like a 3/4 of the driveway, so you couldn't see the rest of it to the road. You couldn't see the road from the house. So she'd disappear through the trees, and she'd be gone for a couple minutes, and we're like losing our mind. We're all bawling. We feel like, oh my God, she's gonna kill herself. We feel awful. And then she'd drive right back up, make a scene again, and be like, I want you guys to prove it. I want you guys to prove it. And we're like, how? And she's like, if you really love me and the Lord, he will show you a way. And we'd be like, he's not talking to us. We can't hear him. We don't know. And then she'd do it again. She'd drive down the driveway again. And we'd be like, oh my God.
She would do that with you guys as well. She would threaten all of us older kids that Like, I forgot who that lady was who drove her car into a lake and drowned her kids in the car. But she was like, I'm taking Julian and Skylar, and who knows, maybe we'll run off the road and smash into the median or drive off the road and into a lake. And we were just distraught.
Oh my God.
And we couldn't stop her from taking you guys. And so.
So she took us. I don't remember being taken.
Yeah.
And being part of the homicide / suicide.
Well, I'm sure plan. She probably wouldn't. She'd have you guys in the car already and then come in and do her thing, because I'm sure you guys would be distraught if you thought you guys were about to get, you know, whatever.
How old were we?
Skylar may have just been a fresh baby. She was really, really fresh.
So I was like 4 years old.
Yeah. So it was early on. And I mean, she did it a few times. On that really happy note, Julia, do you want to make an announcement?
We are taking a break for an ad.
Nice job. You did it.
Okay, sure. So stay tuned. We have ads from some sponsors going through in just a minute, and we'll be right back.
And we're back. You know.
Hi.
Talking
it's
about
been it. So long.
It's been so long. So I'm going to wrap up the Babadook here.
Okay.
But I would say, going back to her just crazy mental manipulation, it's hard for people to imagine, but just trying to paint a scene for you guys of like 4 to 5 children lined up in the hallway, listening to what's going on in the room. You're just, the terror.
We'd also get belted to chairs for days in a row. It was her version of extended timeout.
Yeah.
You would be belted to a chair so you could not move. And you would only be allowed to get out to go to the bathroom. And then you'd get right back in your chair. And sometimes you would be in that chair like that, belted, for like 3 days, 3 to 5 days.
Or you'd be put into the corner where you would stand and with your nose in the corner. I remember our brother would pick holes in the wall, which would earn him more time there. But, you know, he's bored. So bored. He's a child. Mm-hmm. So I think before continuing, you know, we should just kind of tell people that we know these stories. Some of these stories may seem really upsetting. They're true. They happened.
And we're not talking about them to gain sympathy. Our goal here is to bring back things so that we can learn from them, deal with them, confront them. Because it's stuff that does still haunt me. And there are days that I go without thinking about it. But then I'll go through dark periods where it comes right back and it hits me hard. So I'm not looking for sympathy. I've interpreted the situation as in the past as a way to try to define myself in other ways and use it to be better. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about this, we just want you to know we're not, please don't feel sorry for us. You know, if you had a similar situation, we want you to know, yeah, you weren't alone.
And we want to hear your stories too.
Tell us about it. And we're not even the worst case situation, but it's stuff that definitely affected us and was terrible for sure. But we want to talk about it, deal with it, because we want to be better. We don't want this stuff to define us. And by doing that, you have to confront it. Hit on.
So us combining the arts and entertainment with psychology this week, it's essentially just using arts and entertainment to describe, like paint a picture, help us kind of break down for you guys how our brains were trained to think. And, you know, we'd like to get into some discussions about our views on mental health and how vital it is, and the wonderful friend that I've had here in Colorado, who is really, she's a counselor. She's, you know, got all these tips and tricks. I always want to, we used to work out together as well, but I always tell her when I see her, like, I tell everybody I want to be like Stacy. And I do. I want to be like Stacy. And it's just one of those things where we have to take our mental health so seriously, and especially right now, you guys, during this coronavirus. I don't know if, you know, when this does air later on, if we're still going to be in this crisis, I sure hope not, but there is a very good chance of it. But I think we all just need to kind of take this moment. If you're at home, I know I've recommended to Julia to download the Headspace app. It's so unbelievably helpful. For me, I use it every day, a few times a day, and it can help you. I'm just kind of
quiet your mind, reset.
And not just quiet your mind. I think that's the misconception that we get with meditation is that, you know, you want to stop the thoughts. No, the whole thing is he describes in some of his meditations, and he talks about how we want to be like people on the side of the street watching traffic go by. You may notice certain things about certain cars, but in the end, you're just watching things happen and you're noting it and then it's gone. It's not something you're just fixating on. I mean, unless, right, you know, it's a purple car with like a green, you know, grill or whatever. But it's so vital to know that it is okay to have thoughts and emotions and feelings while you're meditating, but just being able to note them and to, you know, gently bring your mind back to the breath. It's not about deleting your thoughts. It's about, you know,
taking more control,
distancing yourself from them. Does that make sense? Being more of a spectator?
Mental social distancing.
Yes, so. Guys, this is perfect. I like that, Julie. That's great. So did you download the app?
Meditation? I did, but I haven't tried. I don't sign up for a free trial unless I know my card's going to be able to take the payment when it switches.
Well, they give you an alert.
They
give you an alert, but whatever.
I'm terrible at this.
Guys, use the free trial. You will.
I've always been into meditation and stuff, and there's free guided meditations as well on YouTube that I use.
There you go.
So those are free.
Maybe you should post some of those on the site, Julia, for people.
Okay. And some of them are also to help with, go beyond just meditation. Some of them are suggestive, depending on what areas you want suggestions as you're in a relaxed state. Whether it be dealing with a bad habit of yours, for me, it's sugar.
Yes, so, same. I'm doing the series on cravings.
Yeah, so, I mean, if anything, so meditation... And that meditation was also looked down upon from our mom.
Oh, yeah.
It was seen as some sort of religious...
Pseudo-religion.
Yeah, and like a mind-controlling and magic.
Anti-God.
Some kind of magic thing, you know? And it's totally not. It actually is very similar to what Christians' versions of prayer is.
Exactly.
Self-reflection... But not in a religious manner. It's being scientific and practical about dealing and interpreting your problems and your habits and your actions. It's not about trying to say, you know, give another figure like a god responsibility for all your problems. That's with prayer. But with meditation, is you're responsible for your actions. And meditation helps you acknowledge... Okay, what are my habits? Mm-hmm. What do I find myself consuming my thoughts about? Like, what do my thoughts consume me about? Because if you don't harness your thoughts and take more control, not quieting your mind completely, you can find yourself doing self-harmful things. You can find yourself stressing out, anxiety, many things, and harmful ways to cope with your problems.
So I think we can just look at our mom as a moral cautionary tale, because let's just be honest, we're all human beings. We all have things that we're proud of. We all have things that we're really kind of ashamed about. But I think what we have to keep in mind is, like, the only reason I think I can talk about this is because I have forgiven her and I've come to... understand that I can't change any of what happened. I'm responsible for who I am now and who I become in the future. So that is where my focus is. But I think we should take a little chunk of time to give our mom a little bit of credit for being human it's easy to vilify others. I want to make sure that we
are
fair and say that I think my mom's progression into madness was exacerbated by a lot. But let's just, you know, have some sympathy here. And I think that by the fact that she herself felt trapped and like a caged animal, she'd once been a very independent, strong woman who's kind of reminds me a little bit of myself, who had found joy and passion in her work at the Busch Gardens Zoo in the 70s. There she met my dad. He's like four to 7 years younger than her, I think seven.
Four.
They, you know, fell in love and then were forced to make an ultimatum. Only one of them could continue to work there once their relationship was kind of found out. So, of course, my dad was the one who kept the job, and my mom lost the thing that brought her the most joy in life. They married and immediately started popping out kids. The once cool...
And she probably dealt with postpartum depression, but that wasn't
undoubtedly talked about. Undoubtedly. It's weird because I would like to know, before Janet was born, how they were in the world. As far as, I mean, they were much... Dad used to be a hippie. He used to be a cool guy. I just want to know what the catalysts were that led them to basically turning so conservative so quickly and joining like this really drastic non-denominational church that pushed the values of teaching your kids at home, the evil of public schools, the danger of secular music. And, you know, they sowed the seeds of extremist Christianity and hardcore right-wing behaviors like early on.
Mm-hmm.
Janet
and that was a later development, because like, I know that her dad, I know that she came from a family that believed in Christ, but mm-hmm. they weren't as extreme as she was, because see, look at how her sister Janet and Uncle Woody turned out. They aren't the same. They're still what you'd call believers,
mm-hmm.
but they did not take the same way she did.
No. The extremism and like the cult of personality that mm-hmm. they got involved in was very much like these really insane cults that we now see these documentaries about, that we wonder how people could have gotten drawn into those things. So let's just kind of drawing it back to her for a second. Janet and Heather went to school for a little while. Mom drove the school bus. But then, you know, I think as the seeds of extremism mm-hmm. was really pushed on them, they pulled Janet and Heather out of school, and they never looked back. The one thing that no one in the church or homeschool groups would ever know was that Mom hated every minute of it. She resented us. She resented us for stealing her freedom, eating up her time, ruining her body, forcing her into a life of subservience that she was meant, according to Scripture, to embrace and cherish as her role in life. But she fought it. I think what
she
we
also
saw,
found us responsible for the deterioration of hers and dad's relationship.
Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things where I think she lost complete sight of her identity. And
the thing is, she didn't confront any of these issues in a medical way, practical way, because she was so immersed in these extremist religious views, which suppress science. She didn't deal with these things, and when you don't take care of the mental health issues that start to crop up,
well, let's
show
just
their heads, it just
let's just get this out of the way too, that part of that I think has to do with the fact that both Mom and Dad were vehemently against immunization. So they're part of that anti-vax movement, for of course, you know, even consulting science, they, you know, disregarded it completely. But my dad always hated the doctor. He always thought that anything that you were dealing with emotionally or physically, it was all in your head, and that you needed to just decide not to be unhappy or decide not to be this way. You know, this is God testing you. It's always some kind of test from the Lord. It's not ever something that's actually backed by scientific research or curable. It's all about the Lord. I just think that if Mom had to suffer, you know, she was going to make sure we would as well.
Another thing that we should disclaim is that we are not attacking Christianity. If you are a believer and you happen to be listening to us right now, we're not attacking your beliefs. What we are talking about is extremism and how dangerous it can be to allow it to define your decision making when and defy science, defy doctors, defy practical, logical things, and use it to manipulate and make unhealthy choices and to be in denial. Just, we're not attacking you. While we don't follow that same faith, we respect it. So please don't take this as a personal attack. We had a very specific experience with our parents.
But if you are an extremist who hates the government, or you know, thinks that the government is out to get you and to take all of your rights away, or you should beat your child for them to be godly, you know, if you are in the subset of extremist people, I really doubt that you're listening to this, but if you are, you probably aren't going to like what you hear.
No, and that's okay. You can just move on. There are literally thousands of other podcasts. So thanks for stopping by. Good trial run. It's like a date, you know? We came, we tried. Just not right for each other, and that's okay.
So swipe left. Basically, you know, the physical and mental abuse is something that I think just morphed out of her extreme despair. And I look at myself and I see how much I've always wanted to accomplish and all the things that goals and aspirations I have. And if I suddenly was with somebody who, and she wasn't forced by any means, so don't think that our dad forced her into some kind of life. I do think that she lost sight of herself, and the fact that with so many of these extremist Christianity groups, or any kind of extremist religion, even you know, Islam, let's just take that into consideration, that our parents, they took a view of the type of lifestyle we needed to return to as a, you know, civilized people. But if you do that, all you need to do is look at the Middle East and look at Islam and just point at it and be like, that's exactly what they're living. Their version of their scripture is a little different, but essentially they're living old biblical times, like in real time today. So if you love it, you can go join them, but you seem to really hate them because of the color of their skin and their differences in religious opinion. But essentially, if you want to live like you're in the biblical days, there you go. You can get another ticket.
Another thing to interpret is the how depression unmanaged leads you to making poor decisions like joining cults or joining extremist groups or believing in extreme ideologies. When you don't deal with your depression, you become very susceptible and open and at risk of being influenced by bigger things that have a stronger mental standing. Like most groups prey on the weak. And I'm not saying that you're weak when you're depressed, but you're definitely not at your strongest and you're very impressionable. So I feel like her depression and her decline was mostly because she never did anything about it, and it just gets worse. And then you invite these very extreme and harmful ideologies into your life, and then it just gets worse from there. So that's,
you're using religion as your prescription versus real medicine, and it's not gonna fix it. And you tied this back in nicely, Julia, to the very last little bit that I'm gonna talk about the Babadook with. Sorry, this just has such a wealth of of wisdom. So you talking about preying upon the weak. Mom has had and has a bottomless supply of weaponry against us. And this reminded me of a scene from The Babadook where, you know, she resents her son for her husband's death and she wants to make him pay in a way for causing her pain. So she creates like the story of the Babadook to prey on his young mind and to instill fear in him so that he can't sleep well. Since she isn't sleeping, why should he, you know? She's afraid of the future. She wants him to feel fear and loneliness too. My mom was just as good at creating tangible fear as the mom in the movie. Mom never wanted us to feel secure about our earthly souls and wanted us to always fear hell and death. No matter how many times, you know, I asked forgiveness for sins and asked God into my heart, I always doubted my place in heaven because of Mom. Mm-hmm. She made it clear we weren't trying hard enough, and it was very likely that we hadn't asked to be saved the right way. I use air quotes. She'd read us like Frank Peretti novels. He was like this adult Christian fiction writer. He also wrote some kids' books, which were pretty fun. about fighting. It's basically about the fight between angels and demons over the human soul as we were in bed about to fall asleep. I would have sweating and screaming night terrors as a result of the seriously dark material covered in those books.
And he wrote with such imagery.
Yes.
For children.
Yes.
Especially. I mean, it only takes mere suggestion with kids, but his stuff was very strong.
But we're talking about adult books here. This was for adults, not for kids. So even with like the companionship of Janet or Heather as, you know, a bedfellow, because we all had shared that same room, I never slept easily. I feared what lurked in the dark and what was under the bed, what was hiding in the closet, waiting for me to close my eyes, you know, and drift into unconsciousness. I even feared like the bathroom at all hours of the day. I feared what was waiting for me in there, in the closet, behind the shower curtain.
I'd always check in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always pull the shower curtain.
Yeah. I'd check every hiding space before I could let my guard down. So this all stemmed from the fear Mom instilled in my heart. And she was methodical about feeding it. She would watch Mystery on KET, allow us to stay up late and watch it with her. Usually so strict about content, she allowed the show, which centered around crime and murder, specifically murder, which further terrified my sensitive sensibilities, you know, and I'd sleep even worse. The night terrors would be so bad to where you guys couldn't calm me down, and I ended up having to sleep with Mom and Dad. Right in the middle of the two of them, I still felt very exposed to all the evils and spirits and malicious monsters who could reach
me. Out of everything that got monitored and watched first and, you know, everything that got filtered through, somehow violence was always still okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was okay. And that baffles me.
Well, and, you know, we'd kind of gone into this section, like, trying to paint a picture of our mom. Because she felt all this fear and depression, and she wanted to share it with somebody. She turned it into a psychological game, to where she always wanted to be needed.
It gave her control. Gave her some control of the situation. Of her pain, what she was dealing with, and because she started to have control, that was her coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Was using it against us.
So like, you know, the mom in the Babadook using that book to terrorize her son. He reacted and in turn became more clingy, fearful. He needed to sleep with her to feel safe, then kept her from sleeping as well. So it was like this weird cycle, you know, she wanted to be needed but also hated being needed, but also wanted to him to be fearful. She wanted to be vindictive. And I just found it amazing. Only one other person I talked to took it the same way. So maybe you guys should go and watch this movie and tell us if we're totally making all this up.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
And you know where you can do that?
Where?
You can go to our website, www.thefamilyties.com. You can find all of our social media links on there, and you can hit us up on any one of those. You can write to us personally an email if you don't feel like advertising it to the whole social media world. We might get to a point where we can share some of your stories if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
So hit us up, watch the movies that we were just talking about. We talked about Tangled, that Disney Rapunzel movie, Carrie, and then yours, Kelly.
The Wolf Pack,
mm-hmm,
documentary, and then The Babadook. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Julia and I wanted to talk about this because, you know, we love art. This is something we want to kind of talk about. Lots of movies and all kinds of forms of art. But essentially what we hope you take away from this is that you've heard the term cinema verite. I find that although movies can be sensationalistic, escapism kind of focused on that, or fantasy, you know, rolled into one, it can also represent a form of reality, truth, mm-hmm, something that reveals bits of humanity in surprising ways. So I think we need to just view art as, even if it's something super weird, it could hold some kind of explanation or some kind of way for us to cope with things, certain traumas that we have. Mm-hmm. Everybody shares traumas. We all have them. So let's start addressing them and stop trying to, you know, hide them or kick them under bed, you know?
Yeah.
Let's not try and lock them in the basement like Mom and Babadook. Let's
talk about it.
Let's get it out in the air.
Let's find, and the good thing about movies is imagery is super powerful. When you have movies or images and stories that you can strongly relate to, it really helps you visualize and maybe see your own situation in a better light with more clarity. And
beautifully said, Julia.
Yeah. And I'm difficult with words. You'll also see this.
No, this. Maybe. Yes. Some of the words that you like to say different than everybody. But, a lot. Yes. Julia, mm-hmm. I have to use the ladies' room. And I think that it is
time to say goodbye.
Time to wrap up. I love talking to you, though.
I love talking to you, too.
You're so cool. Thank you
You're
so much.
You're my essential during this COVID crisis.
Julia, we are going to stay connected because, you know, we're so far away. We're still distancing ourselves, but
we're practicing safe social responsible social distancing.
Yeah, guys. Skype a friend.
Yeah.
All right. We love you guys. Be safe.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week for our next episode.
Excellent.
All right. Bye.
Bye.